This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You bitch! No idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little lasties and Prada shoes at me, honey.
John Callio, will you go around with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a curve?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
You cannot go to your first day of school like that.
You're in the red states now.
No Griffins!
I've got to prepare you for this world.
Be a lamb and make your muff another drinky.
You know, son, the nail that sticks out gets hammered down.
I am being terrorized out there all day, every day.
Aren't you being overly dramatic?
Normally, I would take that as a compliment.
I just wanted to let you know that I think you're amazing.
Got a new star, are you?
I certainly did not mean to make that sound.
Supposed to feel.
You're supposed to be a man and do.
Your situation at school might get a whole lot better. Just tone it down a little.
When did you stop wearing blue jeans?
I'm compromising myself for reasons I don't even understand.
I mean, you're not getting beamed in the head as much anymore.
What am I going to do with you?
I am announcing my candidacy for homecoming queen.
How do you want to be identified? Gay, straight, transgender?
Gender obliviator?
Freak.
Well, I was going to reclaim it as my own anyway.
Are you serious?
You do what you want, but from now on, you're on your own. We dream away.
This is a simple case of decency versus depravity.
If life kicks you,
you just kick higher.
You can call me a freak. Okay. You're all freaks, too. Is that what being a teenager is all about?
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
here comes Billy Bloom.
The F4.
It's for freak, you freak.
Head him to the left. Head him to the left. Stand up, sit down. Fight, fight, fight.
Well, that was the gloriously funny and heartwarming trailer to Freak Show.
It was
the opening night film to the MQFF, this year's Melbourne Queer Film Festival. And you are tuned into Outtakes tonight with Alan and Gina.
Yes.
And if you haven't guessed, this show will be devoted to all things MQFF.
Only a few days in,
and we've still got another week to go.
And there are so many amazing films that have already screened and sold out, that are screening again, that are getting extra screenings. So tonight we are dedicating yet another episode to the films that are on at MQFF, and we want to reward people, don't we, Alan, who have gone and seen films at MQFF?
We do. We have got 5 double passes to go and see BPM, which is Beats Per Minute, which is that fantastic French film.
Gorgeous.
Set in the 90s about ACT UP Paris and activism around HIV.
Absolutely gorgeous film, which I have actually already listed as my top film for 2018. I know it's early,
wow,
but I've put it up there.
I would almost say that's a bit premature.
Well,
No pun intended. No. So, listen, we've got five double passes to give away courtesy of the French Film Festival. So these are double passes which will get you into the French Film Festival, which is a little bit odd, seeing as though we are talking about the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
We are, but in its kind of thing, BPM is screening at MQFF on the 24th of March. But if you can't make that date, there's actually six more screenings of BPM at the French Film Festival here in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And that's why we want to give away these double passes. And how are they going to win them?
Oh, listen, we're
just going to give them out.
We are going to give them away. So please text in with anything, really. But listen, we want to know what you've seen at MQFF, what you've liked at MQFF, or what you're looking forward to seeing at MQFF. And look, it doesn't have to be this year's MQFF. You could actually tell us about MQFF's past. But please text in on 0427JOY949 or email us.
On air at joy.org.au. We've got five double passes to BPM at the French Film Festival. So that's got six more screenings of BPM, lots of dates that you cannot miss this film. And it really does need to be seen on the big screen. Message in with your whatever film you've seen or wish to see at MQFF. And don't forget your member number, because we need to get these tickets to you.
Yep. Do yourself a favour.
We started with the trailer of The Freak Show, which was the opening night film to MQFF this year. Now, Alan and I both attended last year's opening and the opening party and this year's opening and the opening party. Two very different films, two very different vibes. Fill us in, Alan. Fill the audience in to what that was like.
Last year was a film called I Am Michael, starring James Franco, which is a kind of a difficult subject, really, looking at a gay activist who converted from
the other way.
From being a gay person to a straight person and then also becoming a preacher of some description, a Christian preacher. So it was very challenging for the audience. And I think a lot of people were really looking internally with that film. And it was a difficult film. And, in fact, when we came out for the party, it was controversial.
There was tension. There was a lot of divisive conversations going in at the opening night party. Look, you want a film that's going to make an audience talk, but it's a party.
It is a party.
Then we saw Freak Show. Now, tell the audience, Freak Show was amazing.
Freak Show
We loved it. We were sitting there talking throughout the whole film.
A delight.
They would have hated us sitting next to us, that's for sure.
Well, it was a delight because it was just so heartwarming. It was beautiful. We had Alex Lowther, who played the main character of Billy Bloom. And Billy Bloom is as queer as you can get. And
flies his freak flag high. It was gorgeous.
So he's very much the freak in this film. But you know what? The thing is with Billy Bloom, he was absolutely true to himself. You know, there was a little crisis of identity there for a short bit. But what was great about this is we've got someone who is unashamedly queer, unashamedly himself. I'm sorry, God, I stumbled on that word.
And, but with a role model of Bette Midler playing as the mum.
Yes.
How could you not be?
Oh, we had some great cameos, didn't we?
Gorgeous. So we Laverne McEnroe. Cox, John McEnroe is like a PE gym teacher.
Yeah.
Oh, that was an uncomfortable scene too.
Yeah, it was a bit. Yes, it was. Wasn't
yeah.
Actually, you know, talking about a freak flag flying.
But it was just I said to Alan, there was almost too many moments that, especially towards the end of the film, they tied up too many moments for me. But then I need to remember, I wish I had this film when I was kind of watching things like The Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink and, you know, those kind of John Hughes films. Mm. There was nothing like this that was this queer and this, like, he is the hero of this film.
He is, despite really is. Being victimized.
By who?
Outcast. Yes, well, I think,
you know, spotted it first.
Spotted it. And this was, you know, his arch enemy at school was Abigail Breslin, who you might remember from Little Miss Sunshine. So Little Miss Sunshine has turned in this film, she's turned into a witch.
A religious, you know, church preaching kind of.
You know, I think that was done for effect. I don't think she was truly Christian. She was just using it to become a homecoming queen. But you know, it was such a beautiful film.
It was.
And afterwards coming out, you know, the energy, the buoyancy, it was such a fantastic film to talk about afterwards at the after party.
Everyone was really uplifted. You know, and again, people were still talking about the film. So that's the thing. It's important to have films that engage an audience and make an audience sit back back and talk, but a lot of people just, there was that joyous feel. So I really, look, it was only, according to the guide, it was only on for the opening night, but we always have surprise screenings. So I really hope this makes a surprise screening.
Well, I hope so. I hope it makes a surprise screening, but I also hope that it gets a general release or at least to come onto one of the streaming services.
I'll be shocked if it doesn't get a general release or make it to a streaming service really soon, but it is a really big screen kind of film.
Hey, Jenna, I've got a big call. I have to say that this is the best opening night film at MQFF I have ever been to.
You know what?
Without a doubt. Hands down, the best.
Trying to think back to the last couple of years, it's probably created the best buzz for an audience at an after party, definitely. I'll give it that.
That was very diplomatic of
you. It was very diplomatic.
Very diplomatic of you not to agree with me.
But that's okay. And you know what? We want to hear, as we mentioned at the start of the show, we have five double passes to go see BPM at the French Film Festival, which has six more screenings. We've already had a message in from member Matt. Thank you for sending. You've not seen anything yet, but you'd love to see BPM, and we want you to go see BPM. Matt, you've just won yourself a double pass.
Tick.
That
boom.
Easy.
Yes.
That easy. Message in 0427JOY949. Tell us what you'd like to see at MQFF, and you can go in the draw to win a double pass to see BPM, just like Matt did.
Yep,
congrats,
fantastic.
Matt.
Thanks, Matt. So, yeah, so that was Freak Show, the opening night. And, you know, what else about the Freak Show that I particularly liked was Bette Midler's performance in this. The thing, though, was I was just expecting Bette to burst out into song. I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't have a musical number from Bette.
You know what? I think a lot more of us were thinking Bette was going to be more in this film.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know what? I'm kind of glad Bette didn't take over in this role, because it really was, it was the story of the freak.
It was the story of Billy Bloom.
And I'm kind of glad that Billy's story wasn't overshadowed by Bette. Because she does. She just owns the screen. When she's on screen, your eyes are directly on her. Mm. So I'm kind of glad they limited that performance, but still fabulous. Still
but
fabulous.
There's just one thing else I have to comment on. And this is, who was the actor again? Alex Lowther. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But at times when he was dressed as a woman, when he was dressed in drag.
Gorgeous.
He was an absolute doppelganger for a young version of Judy Davis. I mean, like, for sure. It was like Judy Davis.
You were like Googly imaging Judy Davis images throughout the film. Tonight we are looking at all things MQF. We are covering films. Coming up, we actually have an interview with a filmmaker from a documentary that screened on Saturday night called 100 Men. But you'll be back soon here on Outtakes.
There's only one Joy.
Joy.org.au.
And you're on Outtakes tonight with Gina and Alan, and we're talking all things MQFF.
And we are giving away tickets to BPM at the French Film Festival as well.
That's right. We have a message in from Ian, and Ian said he was actually at opening night. He says, loved Freak. We'd love to go and see anything. Hey, Ian, please message in and let us know what your membership number is so that you can get a double pass.
Yes, to BPM. And like we said, BPM, yes, is playing at MQFF on the 24th of March, but it also has six more screenings at the French Film Festival, and we've got five double passes to the French Film Festival to see BPM to give away tonight. Message in 0427JOY949. Email us on air at joy.org.au. Just tell us what you want to go and see or what you have seen at MQFF. Please give us your member number so we can actually get you these tickets, and they're yours.
And we'll go from there.
Yeah.
But moving back to MQFF, like there is just a swag of films to see. And so we're going to be talking tonight about some of the films that are yet to be screened and also one film that we hope will get a repeat screen. But but one of the films that we'd like to talk about is The Cake Maker.
Ah, The Cake Maker, my goodness. Now, if you're a fan of Outtakes, you would know that we have actually already looked at The Cake Maker as part of the Jewish International Film Festival. For those of you that might remember that interview, I'd highly recommend you can go back and listen to the interview with the filmmaker on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But we all saw the film.
Yes.
But Daniel and Alan, you guys had...
Just to fill you in just a little bit,
disagreement.
Gina.
Yeah,
before
okay.
we jump in, I think, you know, the cake maker was really tells a story of a German man living in Germany, and he meets this lovely Israeli man, and they form a relationship.
They do.
And it's a long-distance relationship. But
they do.
Unbeknownst to the cake maker, who is the eponymous title character, his Israeli lover is killed in a car accident. But and unfortunately the cake maker really doesn't know this, and so he journeys to Israel to try and find out what happened. And essentially he starts to infiltrate his ex-lover's, the deceased lover's life Israel.
He tracks down his deceased lover's wife.
Yes, that's right. And then starts to form
a friendship. Is the word we'll start with. We don't want to give too much away,
and
Alan,
it
do we?
It deepens. From
now,
there.
Now, you two did have mixed feelings about the film.
That's
so
right.
So I'm actually going to share that with our audience now.
This is really, it's quite pathological. This film, it really is. It is disturbing, and how we've got this character who goes so much beyond stalking. It goes beyond single white female. It is pathological.
You
and it's
say
so
that
wrong,
but that's you judging
yes.
the character because
I'm sorry, I am, and I feel entitled.
No, fair enough. And I love that when cinema kind of evokes that response from you, because I think that Ophir has been very non-judgmental in the way that he's made this film. He doesn't judge his characters. We as an audience judge them, and I think that says something really interesting. Mm-hmm. But the camera doesn't judge.
No.
And actually that was something that I asked Ophir when I sat down with him. I asked him about why he decided to take this very non-judgmental approach to Alan. What You're Right is a very dubious situation.
Slight difference of opinion there for the cake maker. But yeah. You've got two opportunities to go and see the cake maker and make up your own mind. Are you Team Alan or are you Team Daniel? Cake Maker is coming up Tuesday 20th of March and Sunday 25th of March at MQFF. I really enjoyed the film.
It was an interesting film, I have
different,
to say.
And, very different.
And look, as I've said in the past on Outtakes, I am a bit Jew curious. And and so anything to do with Israeli culture and Jewish culture is interesting for me. And so from that aspect, you've got that inside look of a kosher Orthodox family in Israel. So, it's definitely worth a look.
Now, Ian has messaged in with his member number and he's won the second of five double passes to see BPM at the French Film Festival. Congratulations, Ian. We are trying to give away as many BPM double passes to the French Film Festival tonight. We just want to hear what you want to go and see at MQFF or what you have seen at MQFF on 0427JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. Do not forget to give us your member number so we can get these tickets to you.
Now, Gina, we have both seen this film called 100 Men.
We're
also going to be talking to the filmmaker Paul Orenland about the film. Now, this is a really interesting documentary, and it charts Paul's past really across four decades, where he reflects on his journey over 40 years via a countdown of his 100 most memorable sexual encounters. And it sort of features some really candid face-to-face interviews with some of the people that he's encountered over the past. And I think what's interesting about this particular film over the 40 years, you really get to see a potted history of what it has been like for gay men in particular, mainly New Zealand and
London, and the time we spent there,
and so you actually start to see, you know, from the mid 70s right up to the current day. So it's an interesting premise, really it is a journey through time and a journey through history, and I think that's the thing that's most interesting about this film.
I was very lucky. Paul was not down in Melbourne for very long, but he did come in for the screening that was on Saturday night, and I did get a chance to chat to him, and it was an absolute delight.
It was a delight. And tell me, Gina, were you the first and only lesbian who's ever interviewed Paul?
I think I am the first lesbian who's ever interviewed Paul about this documentary, 100 Men. Haven't been the first lesbian to go see the film and love it. But here is our interview with Paul, all about 100 Men. Have you ever wanted to open up that little black book of yours and go back and revisit your most notable shags? Well, we are joined here in the Joy Studios with Kiwi filmmaker Paul Ormeland, who has done just that with his documentary screening at MQFF 100 Men. What might seem like a cheeky, maybe a self-indulgent, reminiscent romp, it's actually not that at all. Edited together in a wonderful narrative that holds your attention throughout the entire film. It's a new lens to see how gay life, for gay men especially, has changed in the last few decades. It's very honest, it's sex positive, it's highly entertaining, and it's a great engaging lesson to queer history. And for me, it's this history part that I love the most. Now, while most of us remember when we were where Diana died, Paul kind of remembers a different date. He remembers where he was when Diana married Prince Charles in 1981. Paul, where were you when Prince Charles married Diana?
Right. Well, obviously, someone's seen the film.
Clearly.
And, yeah, absolutely. And it was a very memorable moment because I'd met a guy and we were literally turned the television on to watch the wedding. I'd stayed the night with him. We got distracted as the vows were being said, I'm afraid. You can use your imagination on that one.
Now, he was described as the accountant, and from memory watching the film, you describe all accountants as being very well endowed. I think accountants across the world would love to do your taxes.
Look, it's a very bizarre thing, but they're on, you know, on the list, and there have been a few extra people that, you know, the 100 is a selection, shall we say. But yeah, I don't know why. Every accountant I've ever met has been well endowed, as you said. I don't know why, but...
I'm sure you get a very generous tax return saying that. I'm sure they help you find it. One I was curious is, when a filmmaker goes to make something like this, there's usually a pitch involved, and there's usually a pitch to a funding body or to an investor, and especially a pitch to the subjects. So when you came up with this concept, how did that pitch come out, especially to the subjects, and what was people's first reaction?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, the first thing, obviously, was to, you know, to get funding to make it. And it was very much a sort of organic process. I had been doing little interviews with people as a filmmaker that I wanted to do documentaries on. And I'd built up a collection of interviews. I mean, for example, one of the people in the film, James the Samoan, I always thought he'd make a fantastic, you know, subject for a documentary. His life story is amazing. So I did an interview with him. And then bit by bit, I actually had been working on a feature script, which we were trying to get off the ground with the Film Commission. I also have a producer in the UK, Tracy. She said, look, you know, this would make an amazing documentary, you know. And as you see in the film, alongside the interviews, I genuinely had literally just made a list of people I didn't want to forget because, you know, as a promiscuous gay man, I've met many wonderful people and some of them had become friends. And then the idea came to put the two together. Originally, I was never going to be in the film. The Film Commission said the film's not going to work if you're not prepared, because I don't like being in front of camera. I've never ever been in front of a camera. I'm used to being behind. You know, I said, look, you can hear my voice. And the Film Commission quite rightly said, no, you have to front up. And so it grew from there.
Organically.
Yeah. And then when I started to approach people, I was amazed at how many people said yes. Well, I think one of the most amazing things was just really talking to people, because it was, you know, because perhaps we had a friendship, a relationship. Every single person I interviewed made the cut. There wasn't one person that didn't make the final cut. And all of the interviewees, I just wished there was so much more in the interviews. You know, you have to make something work in a 90 minutes. So
the Film Commission were probably right, because it did need you in the film. It is such a personal film. It is such a personal story. Are people surprised in the feedback that you're getting of the sexual intensity of your past? Have you encountered any negative reaction?
Yes, look, this is really interesting, because in some ways, you know, there have been a number of gay men who said, you know, in fact, I think I even read a review in one of the sort of somewhere that said 100 gay men, you'd do that in 2 weeks in Oxford Street. And he's absolutely right. I mean, yeah. You know, the truth is that it's many more than hundreds. I mean, you know, if you say 100 men over 40 years, I think that's what, two and a bit per year, which, you know, the truth is, you know, and I didn't really think about it, but now, and, you know, there's been some sensational sort of articles and people say this is shocking. Well, actually, most gay men that I know of my age lived like that. And this is also a love story. You know, I have a long-term partner that don't want to give away the sort of the essence of the film, but most of the gay men that I know that are in long-term relationships have a form of open relationship. And I think that's just the truth. A lot of gay men watched it and said, this is fantastically honest. It's the way we live, but I wouldn't want my mum to see it. I wouldn't want my straight friends to see it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I feel is really interesting, given the massive changes, you know, equality. I mean, it's unthinkable. When, you know, and in the film I explore, you know, when I came out, I was sent to see a psychiatrist and offered drug treatment.
Yes.
The change being queer, the idea of being queer bashed, which was very common.
And Thatcher's Section 28 rule that was brought in.
Absolutely, absolutely. So things have changed hugely.
Yeah.
But I think there is a new, almost a pressure to be respectable because now we can. There was never the opportunity for me to be respectable and the people around me. Mm. Now, the interesting thing is, from my experience, I don't know that it's changed that much. And, you know, you go on Grindr and, you know, and I have, and there's a couple of young people in the film, and they seem to be living even faster than I did. You know, the Grindr is, you know, you go to a place and you can find somebody 10 feet, 20 feet away. At least, you know, in my day, you had to actually, you know, go somewhere. It's complicated. And I think it not everybody agreed to be interviewed. And it was interesting that I approached one person who was a good friend. He was now a headmaster.
Oh, okay.
And he was worried. He said, look, you know, and I know, and he had a partner and they were married. And I know, you know, from personal experience that it was an open relationship.
Yeah.
And yet he didn't want that to be open amongst. So there was a sort of new form of, you know.
And is he an openly gay headmaster?
Oh, he was absolutely openly gay. And yeah, everybody knew, you know, his partner, and they had a big wedding. But I think one of the things is there's a massive gulf between, you know, the gay male experience and a heterosexual experience. Yes. It's hugely different.
Yeah.
Not better or worse, it's just different.
The list you made was chronological, but I like that you actually flip the interviews around. And by doing so, you actually start, I mean, we start by seeing surfers on screen and you could think you're about to watch a different documentary. And you start with talking about the Maori guy who you couldn't track down. But then it starts telling us about the narrative of New Zealand at the time. And as you talked about, you mentioned younger guys using Grindr and it could be a similar experience. But again, what this show, you show us a landscape in a time and place where there is no Grindr, there is no internet. You're lucky to find, as a 16-year-old, that magazine in a dirty bookstore in order to start discovering your sexuality, which then leads to you entering the seminary.
Yes.
For a period of 8 months. Yes. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think things were slower. And in some ways, you know, I'm not sure. I quite like the fact they were slower. That's perhaps because I'm slightly older now, but let's not talk too much about that. You know, there was a sort of uncovering, a sort of, you know, an innocence that, you know, the dirty bookshop, which is where one went, and I wrote a letter to someone and you had to wait for a week for the letter to come back. Whereas nowadays, things are very in your face and very instant. You know, I don't want to be sort of, you know, that idea that everything was better in the old days. And things are clearly so much, you know, it's amazing. There are really good things that have that have come out of the change. I think one of the things that's amazing is that at work, you know, I have lots of television company and we do a whole range of things. And most of the people I work with are straight. And they totally accept that I'm gay, and there's no, we have genuine friendships.
Mm.
And the editor that cut this film, you know, is a straight guy. And we had the most wonderful laughs doing it and really fascinating conversations about the differences. And in fact, it would have made another whole film if you could have seen, you know, the conversations that we had. So, you know, and I think that's, and there was just no sense. I mean, he just loved working on it and loved the sort of, you know, the ideas that we explored. One of the things that is, I think, there's a guy in the film, Chris, who talks about, I wanted equality, but I didn't want to be the same.
Yes.
And to me, that sums up what I started to explore. It was a genuine exploration. I didn't set out to do that. In talking to people and going on the journey to make the film, I worry about the pressure to conform. There was a wonderful sense of being an outsider. One of the things that's really interesting, you know, in the UK where I spend a lot of time, there was a big book chain bookstore called Waterstones, and they always used to have a gay section, which I loved going to, and I would find the most amazing little books and, you know, specialist writers and fantastic, that really explored, you know, the gay experience with honesty and truth. And a number of years back, Waterstone said, look, we don't need a separate section anymore because it's all equal now. We'll just put the gay books with everything else. And the result of that was that you only got a few of the bestsellers, and even more worrying, those bestsellers were watered down to be somehow acceptable. So that sort of, you know, that wonderful our world,
our
where we
curated
can,
little section someone can stumble into.
Yeah, and where you can explore things, you know, that really, even in making this film, which was funded by the Film Commission, there were things that I was aware of that perhaps I would have liked to explore, and yet I was aware that perhaps I couldn't.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
And you're on Outtakes this evening with Gina and Alan, and tonight we're talking all things MQFF. And we've had a message in, Gina, from Steve.
Steve.
Because we've got a couple of, we've got some double passes to give away to BPM.
Yes,
which is
we do.
A fantastic French film about
ACT UP, Paris
ACT
movement.
ACT UP Paris and AIDS activism in Paris in the early 90s. And Steve has written in and said he would like to go see The Cake Maker at MQFF because anything with a potential bunny boiler sounds fascinating. Well, Steve, you know what? You're going to get a bit of a bunny boiler-esque film, so yeah, check it out.
Cake Maker is 20th of March, Sunday 25th of March at MQFF. Steve, you have also won yourself a double pass to see BPM at the French Film Festival. As we said, BPM is screening at MQFF and it is screening at the French Film Festival. We've got two more double passes to give away.
Yep. Text in, folks.
0427 Joy 949. All we want to hear is what you have or what you'd like to go see at MQFF and your member number, and we'll give those passes away.
And Gina, last week you got to speak to the director and filmmaker for 100 Men, which is a doco screening at MQFF, which is a fascinating doco, which charts the last 40 years of one man's sexual adventures. So it's a countdown from 100. Backwards in time to number one, which is today. And so, you know, Gina, I think you were a little bit cheeky in that interview when you were talking about accountants. And, and you know, Paul's estimation of accountants is that, you know, accountants are really quite well endowed.
As you heard him say, every accountant that he's encountered has been well endowed. So I'm sure he's getting a very good tax return at this.
And you know what, Gina? That just makes me want to go out and hunt down a few accountants, actually.
I think a few people would after that. Now, this is part two of our interview with Paul, talking all things 100 Men. You know, you mentioned frequently that so much has changed from your memories in New Zealand. The closing down of gay bars in San Francisco and the evolution of gay ghettos. We're seeing it everywhere.
Yep.
And a lot of the people you interview talk about this as well, and it's this kind of normalisation, this homogenisation of the gay community. I kept feeling and hearing the word of a mourning, a loss.
Yes.
The film really captures that some of us still need and not comfortable broader, wider world. Says you've got marriage equality.
What more do you want?
What more do you
want? What more do you want? And that you're absolutely right, because, you know, I think the reality is that the statistics around, you know, suicide amongst LGBT people
hasn't dropped.
No. And in fact, you know, and there are some very shocking statistics coming out of both Europe, Germany, UK and America that have shown just recently, as there's a massive swing to the right, that homophobic attacks have gone up. I was shocked. For me, what's so important is identity and being proud and, you know, and I hear young people say, I don't want to be defined by my sexuality. Well, for me, that was the thing. I wanted to be proud. I am proud.
The theme of monogamy and open relationships and celebrating our difference, which I love that this film unashamedly celebrates our difference.
It's called 100 Men.
Exactly. And these 100 men. Because you've obviously screened this in festivals. Have you seen anyone reacting in the community in portraying this openness to open relationships? Have you gotten any kickback on any of that sort of stuff?
Look, it's been amazing going, you know, and I wasn't sure about what the response to the film would be. And, you know, a lot of gay men, older gay men, said this is, you know, honest and it's absolutely truthful and we love it and we feel, you know. Yeah. But there was a very interesting case in Los Angeles where after the festival there was a discussion amongst a group of older men and the younger guy, and he didn't see me standing behind him. But he sort of said, look, it was interesting, but I feel sorry for all those people because now that we're normal, you know, we don't have to be so promiscuous. And of course, that was the wrong thing to say, and they all pounced on him. And look, that's partly a youthful thing, and even in, you know, it's an innocence. And I once believed, you know, in living happily ever after, and that was because that's what I've grown up with. And somebody in the film says that. Meeting people primarily for sex, some became friends, but, you know, and I think one of the other wonderful things about being gay is that it gives you an entrance into so many different worlds. I've met so many fascinating people. Some have become friends, some are just, you know, late night fantasies that, you know, you think about, and others I still know. And in a way, it's broadened my horizons, you know, and I think that's one of the joys of being gay, that you know, it cuts across every race and class, and we should celebrate that. And
so a diversity plays a big part in the different men you sleep with, and obviously geography plays a role in that.
Yeah.
Online hookups at the moment are currently being criticised for projecting racism, you know, looking down on anything femme.
I think, look, the online thing, and I've never been, you know, I'm a bit old-fashioned, weirdly enough. I like the sort of idea that you're in, you know, a bar or a sauna, and, you know, you see someone at the corner of your eye and you know that there's attraction there and you sort of explore that. Online is somehow takes... I think one of the things about online is that it does tend to, I think, people meet the same sort of people, whereas one of the things about 100 Men, and when you see the film, we don't interview 100 men, and many of the people there are just given little numbers and names and fun names, but each of those have a story. And, you know, for example, I think number whatever it is, you know, 58 or whatever, you know, is an Albanian gangster.
Yes.
Well, actually, that was somebody I met in a sauna for maybe 5 or 6 times, and, you know, it was back in the 90s, and I think he'd had, you know, the odd line of coke or whatever and was rabbiting on, but he really was an Albanian gangster. He was involved, and I got to know him quite well, and his life was just so, you know, and of course I said, you know, what if your mates knew what, and he said they'd kill me.
Yeah.
And he was involved in all sorts of terrible rackets, and, you know, I mean, really quite serious rackets.
One of the men spoke about, and I think the words he actually used were emotional retardation of gay men, because at a time when being gay was taboo, where there is no, you know, depiction of us in society, men, especially when they were younger, miss out on that early kind of experience of falling in love, of courtship, of crushes, and being able to express that desire openly the way their straight young peers did.
Yeah, yeah.
In this kind of culture setting that tells us, oh, we're equal and stuff, do you think we'll see a different impact for our next generation?
That's a really interesting question. You know, and you're talking about Chris, the journalist. In fact, you know, we've often had, Chris is wonderful. I've had big arguments with Chris about things. And, you know, I'm not sure I entirely agree, because in some ways, you know, for me, the sort of furtive exploration of things was part of, you know, and the promiscuity was part of that. But that doesn't apply, you know, and certainly I fell in love, and there were absolutely no role models, and there was no way of, you know, knowing how to experience that. Today, it's fantastic that we have gay marriage, and it means so much to people, and it's a symbol. Family, relationships, being in love, those are the things that really matter. It's wonderful to see positive depiction in the mainstream. I think it's fantastic that we have role models, that we have equality, that marriage is possible, but I think it's also important not to just be swept up, and, you know, to hang on to the unique identity that, you know, the LGBT community can provide.
Was there anything that you kind of, at the end of the process, you thought, wow, didn't expect to learn that? Surprised me.
It's completely corny, and I don't want to give away the end of the film. But the truth, being absolutely honest, the thing that I learnt and surprised me was, you know, what I've just been talking about, how important family is, how much, you know, how much I am grateful for having met my partner, who I've been with for many, many years. And there were some surprising interviews. I break my rule. Originally, it was just going to be people that I had sex with. But as I travelled around, I kept meeting people who were saying such interesting things. And so from time to time, you know, rules are made to be broken. So from time to time, we talked to the choir master that I happened to talk to. But also one of the people in the film that a number of people have said is a real hit is a very old guy called Alan. His truth that he says towards the end of the film resonates back, and a number of people have talked about that, and I was surprised ultimately. I never expected it to be a love story, and I hope there's a bit of a love story in there somewhere.
You even have a top 10.
Ah, yes.
Was that controversial? Has anyone that's been in the film said, excuse me, Paul, why was I not in your top 10?
There is actually on IMDb, somebody in Scotland says, he sort of says something about, I was on the casting couch but didn't get the call. So,
that's brilliant.
Yeah. And, there are a number of personal coded references that nobody will get, you know, and there are a lot of people that, I mean, there were so many that I would love to have, I've sadly lost touch with.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to have had the Albanian gangster in there. But
has a lesbian ever interviewed you on for this film?
No, this is absolutely the first time, although as I mentioned before that a few gay women have actually come to screenings, and for much to my amazement they enjoyed the film.
It's a gorgeous film. and again I did have a friend kind of go, what are you going to relate with this film? And it's like, I'm actually seeing this is as much my history. It's the history of the men that I grew up with, the men that took care of me. This is equally my history as well.
And my business partner in the UK, who's a co-producer of this, is lesbian, and we've worked together, made my earlier films, and she's working on the new thing, and she's wonderfully supportive, you know, and there is a shared history. It's different in places,
yes.
But and I'll never forget during the height of the AIDS crisis,
yes.
It was gay women that dived in a way that and I remember prior to that, often gay men and gay women saw themselves almost as enemies. And yet the AIDS crisis, there was the most incredible support. And I think that was something that was almost a good thing that came out of such tragedy.
That's solidarity. So. It is an absolutely gorgeous film. Now, this did screen on Saturday at MQFF. If people have missed out on seeing it at MQFF or at Queer Screen in Sydney, where can they go and see this next? Because it's a must-see.
Much to my amazement, Netflix have picked it up.
Fabulous.
And it is going to be on Netflix from the 31st of March in Australia and New Zealand. And I think it's also in the UK. I'm not sure what other territories, but, and it's wonderful to think that, again, Netflix, allows a lot of people to see it.
That's fantastic. Paul, thank you so much for joining us here on Outtakes at Joy 94.9.
I sort of fancied him, but when he suggested that I could come back and stay the night at his place at Buckingham Palace, I thought, this is a chance I've got to say yes to. A few years ago, I started to make a list of all the men I'd met through sex. But then it became something more.
I think the conversation's shifted a little bit. It's like, we know you're gay, we don't care that you're gay, shut up about it.
So if you knew you were gay, why did you get a girlfriend?
I was going to tell people back then.
The public hatred towards gays and lesbians was really at its zenith.
Children who need to be taught to respect traditional moral values are being taught that they have an inalienable right to be gay.
Well, there was nothing in the magazine that you could object to. I mean, you couldn't have seen the outline of a cock even if you wanted to. It just wasn't there.
I both went off and sought Christian healing to deal with the homosexual issue in my life. And then I was also wandering the streets of Amsterdam trying to connect with that.
What has happened over the last 40 years is absolutely fundamental to where we are today. We have achieved an enormous amount.
The Castro has basically turned into gay Disneyland. Our sacred spaces are being completely eliminated as a result of that.
We had a ghetto for a while. We possibly can't live in that ghetto anymore.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
We're naming him Hunter.
The miracle of life. Why am I looking at your wife's uterus?
What the hell? Did your mother drop you?
You're a complete fraud. You probably stole your vaccine idea from some grad student, and I'm pretty sure those children hate you.
You're a gifted microbiologist. You have become a liability. You are to undergo intensive sensitivity training. You will meet with a sensitivity coach, and she will decide the proper course of action.
Morning. Coffee?
So it's still considered sexual harassment, even if I say just kidding afterwards?
Yes, George, it is. Mint?
If you want to keep your job here, the administration will, I suspect, need to see a real transformation from within.
911, what is your emergency?
Yes, I'd like to report an intruder. Her name is... What's your name again?
I woke up with a malignant parasitic cyst called a sensitivity coach.
If you begin by using I feel, the person's less likely to be offended. You're simply stating how you personally feel.
Okay, I feel that's retarded.
Many people find that word offensive.
Are you even a real person, or are you a schizophrenic hallucination? Should I be on medication?
Probably.
Have you guys noticed anything weird about Dr. Wolf?
First rule of Fight Club is...
It's almost like she's...
happy.
Is there anything going on between you and Caroline?
Don't be ridiculous.
That's the trailer for Sensitivity Training, Gina, and this is a hilarious comedy that I think you and I both really enjoyed.
I didn't think I was going to enjoy it. I absolutely loved it. It was a real surprise, and especially because the film kind of started off a little bit slow. I mean, it sold to me as a lesbian comedy kind of thing, and I think you and I both reflected outside before, you know, when we were talking about this film. Yeah. Took us a while to go, where's the lesbian in this?
I know. I'm going, where the hell is... This is not a lesbian film. I'm like, where is it?
Just because one of the characters is lit, and then we're like, oh, okay.
Get it. So we're not going to give away the twist.
We don't want to give away the twist because Sensitivity Training does, you know, its first screening sold out. It's actually got a screening next Saturday, 24th of March. It is actually really funny. It's really funny film. And I can't see it dividing an audience. It's kind of sweet.
I think
so
too.
In a cheeky kind of way.
You know what I've noticed at last year's MQFF and this year's MQFF? There seems to be a trend for lesbian comedies.
Well, a lot of
What's that about? Gina, can you tell? What is it about?
I don't think it's as simple as saying the audience asked for this and then they delivered. I mean, it takes a very long time to make a film. So it's not like, you know, I just think it's a wave of comedy films. But you know what? Last year there were, you know, there was Date for Mad Mary.
Yes,
there
that's
was
right.
There was a few comedies last year.
That's what I'm saying. There seems to be, a trend for... And rom-coms as well. So we've got comedies rom-coms. Yeah. So this is like it's turning a new chapter in lesbian film.
But similar to Freak Show and I think Love, Simon, which is coming up really soon, we are starting to see some really good, feel-good, happy kind of teenage John Hughes-esque type of films, which we haven't really had in the past. So it's... I kind of like it.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past, Gina, how queer film needs to move on. And we actually, as we say, we need to see ourselves represented on film. And this is it. This is about portraying our ordinary, everyday existences. And the fact that we might be queer is just incidental.
Exactly. So, we want those popcorn films that we see every other night on the week on free-to-air, every other night playing at the cinemas. We want to see... Equally, these just silly films where just the people happen to be queer.
That's
and fly
right.
their freak facts. So, yeah, Sensitivity Training, highly recommend that. It is on again Saturday, 24th of March. First screening sold out. I think this one is actually also on standby, so tickets are selling fast.
You know what? It is a film for all audiences, so you don't need to be a lesbian to see this. It should be... Anybody should go see this. It's a funny film.
It is
Check
a funny
it out.
Film.
Check it out on Saturday.
What else should people go and see, Alan?
I think there's another film which was a real favourite of yours. You're really looking forward to this, Gina. This was on your must-see list.
This one here?
This one. I could never do this. I wrestle for existential reasons. Immigration and codependency.
Bye, Mom. Gonna go meet friend.
Does he have potential?
50 ways to eat a beaver.
That is literally about beavers.
Okay.
Are you a writer?
No. I own a bookstore. Mm.
And you like to eat beavers?
I do.
There are also some mangoes.
The Mexican ones just aren't as sweet.
That's not what you said last night.
My mother wants to meet you.
Are you married?
No.
We should find you a husband.
But before that,
we must find Zainab a husband.
I have never lied to you.
You are lying to your mother.
I saw you with your friend.
I'm just trying to live my life. Maybe you should go live yours. Train me.
No.
Yeah, culturally diverse, very funny.
It was. And hey, Gina, I've got a question for you. Mm. Are there 50 different ways to eat beaver?
Look,
You don't have to answer that question.
But, you know, if you want to message in really quickly on 0427JOY949 with your member number, you know what, if you can answer that, I'm going to give you a double pass to see BPM at the French Film Festival. Plug.
And I want to know, are Pakistani mangoes sweeter than Mexican mangoes?
Look, Signature Move is the film just a couple. Signature Move really has been the film I've been hanging out to see this entire festival. I've seen its performance at the International kind of queer film festival circuit. It is rating really, really well. There have been two screenings. The last was actually today. I think both have actually sold out. Mm-hmm. So the two screenings that have been there. It's a very different comedy. It is, I think an audience need to remember that it is a low budget comedy. It's probably a self-funded film, so it's not as slick and as pretty as some of the films that, you know, it's not like Freak Show.
And it's not like Sensitivity Training.
And it's not like Sensitivity Training. Yep. But, you know, if there was a wrestling Bendit, like Beckham lesbian kind of film, I think this would be it. I'm sorry to stereotype it, to pigeonhole it that way.
The wrestling component of it kind of reminded me a little bit of Roller Derby.
A little bit.
In that sort of way, in that it seemed, you know, you had to have a character and you had to have a mask and it was a bit fake in that sense. Like the world, WWF wrestling, you know, it's kind of fake, and it's where this is the idea of having a signature move comes from, because you need to have a signature move when you're a wrestler.
Correct.
But it's not like real wrestling. We're not talking about, you know, pin you to the mat kind of wrestling. No, it's more of a show.
Yeah. And look, I know I was watching this film with really high expectations and, you know, I just wanted to sit in the editing room and cull. And I'm like, no, just, you know what, we're allowed to have films that are a little bit, you know, diverse in their storytelling. It was the cultural diversity that I loved the most about this. It was so nice to see, you know, two different cultures that aren't, you know, white Anglo-Saxon kind of people on screen leading the charge. And that's what I really enjoyed about it. But,
you were expecting more.
I was really wanting more, but it's still a good film. I think it's still going to delight. I really hope it delighted the audience that got to see it. Again, it might be one of those surprise extra screenings because it has done really well.
But, Gina, I have to say, the lead actress who plays the Pakistani Muslim character.
Shorty like me.
I could not take my eyes off of her. She was beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous.
And, of course, her love interest, the Mexicana chica.
Yeah.
She was gorgeous too, although her eye colour kept on changing. Yeah. It was going from brown to green. I was a bit distracted by her.
I didn't find her a very sympathetic character. And I don't think it was actually that character that probably made me go, oh, come on, bring a bit more to this game. And, yeah, I didn't warm to her at all. So,
you know, and this is a film that we wanted to watch for our rom-com.
Yes.
Program last year, and it was only just released in the US when we were doing that rom-com show. So I think we're all looking forward to Signature Move, but it's definitely worth a watch.
It definitely is. Now, we're almost out of time at Outtakes, and we're going to be back in 2 seconds.
Joy to the world. joy.org.au.
Oh, hello and good morning. Now, if you've never been invited to a ranchero breakfast...
Well, it's like the gay Butch Cassidy, except not Butch.
Oh, Manny, you old cockhound. I didn't see you there.
Cut. You can't say cockhound on basic cable.
Do you guys do this at home?
Oh, no, we don't get along this well at home.
I'd love to play the full trailer to that, but we are running out of time here on Outtake. What is this film, Alan? We've both seen it. We both love it.
It's called An Ideal Home, starring Paul Rudd and Steve Coogan. And it's this hilarious romp.
Brilliant.
Of this older gay couple who have been together for years and whose relationship is really built around arguments and bickering.
It was,
you know, they love to fight and they love to make up.
They love to fight a bit too much, but they also did actually love to make up. So yeah, we'll give them that.
And so there's a curveball that comes into this because Steve Coogan's character, Erasmus, has a son, and his son has a son. So his grandson rocks up unannounced one day and this sort of throws a spanner in the works. And there's really a story of how these two become parents in a way. And
Parents
in a way. And a fantastic performance by Paul Rudd, who you might remember, has played a gay man before in The Object of My Affection, 1998, with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah,
that's when I first, you know, he was also in Clueless as well.
He was in Clueless. I actually remember him from Clueless. The thing I love most about this film was actually, look, I love the entire film. I think it was extremely cheeky.
Yep.
But I love its tribute to LGBT families at the end of the film over the closing credits. That was absolutely gorgeous.
That was beautiful.
It was, you know, the ending was a bit predictable and soppy, but very clever, very cheeky. I do hope this gets an additional screening.
Hope so.
I think
Fingers
people
crossed.
Are going to love it.
If it does get another screening, go see it.
Yes. We're out of time.
That's it, Gina.
Oh.
We're Mr. and Miss Have a Chat today, aren't we?
Totally.
Run out of time.
Well, I hope you enjoy MQFF as much as we are. There are so many more sessions you can go and see.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.